Now to the country facing the prospect of the entire population of its capital, some 15 million people, evacuating because the city's running out of water. On the 19th of November, that's what the president of Iran, Masoud Pezeshkian, warned the citizens of Tehran might need to happen soon. But would evacuating the capital even resolve the problem, and would Tehranis agree to leave? Here's the response of one resident who spoke to France 24.
The president is funny. He thinks that we're like flamingos and we can just move to another city, like we can fly, no problem. But it's not possible. We work here. Our children study here.
Professor Kaveh Madani is intimately familiar with Iran's water issues. He's now the director of the United Nations University Institute for Water, Environment and Health, and was previously the deputy head of Iran's Department of Environment. Professor Madani, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me.
Iran's in its sixth consecutive year of severe drought, and you've characterised the situation in Tehran not as a water crisis, but as water bankruptcy. Could you describe the situation that Tehran's facing for us and tell us what you mean by water bankruptcy?
Well, it's probably very easy to explain, as we all have had financial issues in our lives, or at least we know someone who has faced those issues. Consider surface water as your checking account, which gets renewed by nature every year. So we normally are okay as long as our expenditure is below the level of income that the nature is giving us. When we are short, we go to our saving account, and that's something there to save us during the dry years, and it's the strategic reserve groundwater. And groundwater is what we have inherited from our ancestors, and we need to recharge it when during the wet years, and can use it to a limit during the dry years. If you exhaust both and continue that for a long, long time, and then you have a big gap between your water use and renewable water supply. That's why your aquifers keep declining, your rivers keep drying up, lakes, wetlands go dry, desertification continues, biodiversity loss happens, wildfires happens, and on and on. And all these things that we are seeing today in Iran are symptoms of a chronic problem that is there. Crisis is something that you can fix and address. There is at least a hope that you bring all the forces together and can go back to the normal you experienced before, but that's not the case. Even if it rains tomorrow, even if Iran has a few wet years, it cannot address its land subsidence issues. It cannot bring its aquifers back to the level they were decades ago. So for decades of bad management, decades of relying heavily on engineering solutions and dismissing water as a limit to growth has created a situation that we are seeing today. Iran's capital, its richest city with more than 15 million people, is facing day zero, and reservoirs are at very low levels, and aquifers are already empty, and we don't know when the taps would fully run dry.
Yes, you use that term, day zero. What does that mean in water circles?
Day zero is the day when the municipal taps would run fully dry. For those who might not know, the Iranians have a very Western lifestyle, maybe not really matching the dry climate of Iran in general, and had good coverage of urban water supply in almost the whole country. Wherever there is a city, they have good coverage of water supply, clean water supply. But now there are interruptions, periodic outages, reduced water pressure, and threats for a full dryness of those taps, something that the Iranians are very unfamiliar with. I grew up in that city. I was born and raised there, and we have never had such a thing. And that's why many Iranians, I would say, are even in denial, because they don't understand what's happening and the threat can be so real.
Is it possible to say how far away from day zero Tehran is right now?
Not really, because we don't know the exact status of groundwater, and the government has to also really do a bit of risk management and make a decision about how much more water they want to release from the existing system. Because if there would not be any rain, we don't know if the situation can be better next year. So that's always a challenge of those who run reservoirs and water systems, and they have to hedge the risk and decide how much to release today and how much to keep for tomorrow. The good news is that Iran is getting closer and closer to its peak precipitation season. So now we're in December. Within the next few months, we expect more rain. Unfortunately, there has been a little bit of rain in the last few days across Iran, including Tehran, very short, few millimeters, but still that's a big relief for a system that is so close to day zero, which is said to be between a few days till a few weeks.
On Sunday Extra, we are speaking with Professor Kaveh Madani, who's the director of the United Nations University Institute for Water, Environment and Health. Kaveh, how does Tehran's predicament presently compare to other cities that have contemplated evacuation? Has something like a full-scale evacuation of a capital city actually happened before because of water shortages?
At least I don't know of that, a capital of a country, a city at the scale of Iran being evacuated because of water shortage. I joke about it. During the attack of Israel on Iran, President Trump put something on his social media accounts asking the residents of Tehran to evacuate Tehran. And very soon they got educated that that's impossible for a place like Tehran. But the president of Iran should know this better than President Trump. So evacuation of a capital of that size is not going to work. You know, you cannot just move people to another location. If you want, you have to have infrastructure in place. You also need water for that. If you look at the other cities in Iran at the moment, the situation is not any better. So it's a question of where do you want to take people and what are you going to do with your government offices and everything. People have kids at school, people work for government, the business opportunities are in Tehran. And Tehran is not only suffering from water shortage problem, it's also dealing with very bad air pollution right now. People's health is being threatened, but still they're there because their source of income is there. Tehran has traffic. Tehran has other issues of big metropolitans. People are there. Water is one of the many problems. Evacuation at the full scale would not happen. But Iran has tried temporary evacuation, encouraging people to leave the cities by prolonging weekends, shutting down government offices and schools near the weekends to prolong the weekends. And when this has been tried during peak electricity demand days and air pollution episodes, and it has been effective to an extent. So if you have a city that, you know, has only a few days to a few weeks of water left, even saving for a few hours can make a huge difference. So that strategy might be, I would say, employed again, but full evacuation is impossible. Relocation is also a long-term measure, and we have heard that for a long, long time. It's very hard to do so. And before doing so, one should ask why Tehran reached this situation of having problems not only in its water sector, but also other sectors. And if you want to build another city, how can you guarantee that the same problem would not be reproduced? Until then, the strategy sounds like moving a patient in the ICU from one bed to another in a hospital that is collapsing very soon.
Yes, it's interesting that you use the bankruptcy analogy, because although bankruptcy is a dire fate, it was actually introduced as a way of allowing people in chronic, unmanageable debt to draw a line under things and start again, something which I assume is not really possible when it comes to water shortages. So, Kaveh, given the situation as it is today, what can and should Iran do to deal with its water shortage problems?
So bankruptcy, you know, is not only about insolvency, but also about rethinking a fresh new start, right? Rethinking your strategy, thinking and understanding and accepting and admitting to a fact that your business model, your development model is not working. Just a few years ago, Iran was in the news for its unprecedented floods and the whole country was wet. And still we are in this situation a few years after very, very wet years. The country needs to revise its economic model. It has to rethink its development strategies. It has to rethink if it wants to continue allocating 90% of its water to an inefficient agricultural sector. Of course, the answer sounds easy, that Iran shouldn't do so. But the Iranian government, like many other governments in the developing world, understands that cutting water from farmers means unemployment and loss of livelihoods. And if they do so, there would be national security threats. If they want to resolve the issue, they have to diversify their economy. They have to create alternative modes of livelihoods and opportunities for people in the farming sector. But that's impossible as long as the country is in its resistance economy mode to withstand the sanctions, and as long as the country is in a war with the rest of the world. So unfortunately, at this point, even the water destiny of Iran has been tied to its international relations to an extent, because if they don't rescue their economy, there is not much room for reducing Iran's the pressure of its economic sector on its natural resources, on its water. And as long as that's the situation, they're going to farm till the last drop of water is available. I don't see any fundamental shift. I don't see any signs of that coming. And I'm even worried that with the, you know, as much as I wish that there would be rain, and, you know, I want relief for the Iranians and I want them out of misery, I also think that as soon as there is rain and floods, people would forget that this situation was so real and near.
Your answer there took us from technical and natural issues into the realm of political problems and deep structural problems as well. Is there any sense at this stage, Kaveh, that the water situation is converting into popular unrest and dissent against the government of Iran?
This is very, very hard to forecast. So if you look at collapsing systems, everything seems to be working until it's not. Or at least, you know, so any in today's Iran, anything can function as a trigger for unrest, or even you know, creating a national of a cause of a serious national security threat. But no one can bet that that would be water. And things can even go in a different direction. When people are struggling to have their basic needs met, right? Basic, you know, to be able to breathe, to be able to shower and drink water, they might not have the bandwidth to fight for freedom and equality or women's rights. So we have seen societies that were under much under increased pressure. People didn't even have the lost the bandwidth to fight for other things that they were asking for once. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of delusional or even a distracting illusion. Think about you know, water as an end to the Islamic Republic's regime. But certainly the situation right now can create additional dissatisfaction, additional anger. And the accumulated anger at some point might turn into a big thing, but we don't know when exactly that would happen and if that would happen any soon.
When we think about the causes of the current situation, from what you've said so far, you've really pointed to mismanagement issues and the wrong model of development. To what extent do you think other factors, such as just the state of the natural environment itself, population levels, and something like climate change, or even, as you referred to, international sanctions, are substantial factors in the situation that Iran is currently facing?
So in 2014, I wrote an article, and at the time I was at Imperial College London, that identified three major causes for Iran's water crisis. One being the rapid population growth, and more importantly, the way that this population has been distributed across Iran. So Iran's population got more than doubled within two decades after the 1979 Iran revolution. You know, the state of economy was improving, but also ideologic reasons and incentives were provided to increase the population. And that population didn't settle, like, you know, didn't go to everywhere in the country. They ended up going to a few metropolitans that expanded massively, and those metropolitans are the ones that are today facing water problems: Tehran, Mashhad, Isfahan, and, you know, that's the consequences. Inefficient agriculture sector is another one. Iran has been an oil-based economy, very wealthy when it comes to oil incomes, and then that oil income has become a subsidy to support the agriculture sector. And the Iran's agriculture sector has suffered from lack of productivity, but it was a sector that provided jobs to the poor. And Iran had slogans of food self-sufficiency because of wars, because of sanctions, because of the issues it had with the rest of the world, which was always used as a cover to keep business as usual in the agriculture sector. So irrigated agriculture kept expanding across Iran despite, you know, climatic fluctuations or climate change. Then the third cause is mismanagement and I would say misgovernance and decades of bad decisions, decades of decisions related to development that impacted the water sector. Over-reliance on engineering solutions. Iran became a top dam builder, one of the top dam builders in the world, actually building a lot of dams, celebrating dam building success, where making it actually very domestic and making it an independent business from the West. But over-damming became an issue. Over-pumping from the aquifers became an issue. So you put all of these together, then the house goes on fire. Now add to this the issue of climate change and sanctions that are functioning as catalysts. They're not the main causes. You cannot blame them. Not only in Iran, even if you ask me about Australia, you cannot blame the problems on climate change. Climate change is a catalyst, is exacerbating the problems. But the underlying problems are always homemade. They are there because of decades of decisions, because of legacy problems that accumulate and at some point appear. And what we are seeing in Iran right now, yes, the dryness is serious, the drought is serious. What we saw in Tehran, for example, in the first 2 months of the water year, October and November in Tehran, was unprecedented. You compare it with the last, since 1979, Tehran has never had such a low level of precipitation. That cannot be dismissed, but that's the reason that the system has no resilience or has no tolerance is because of that bad management, which makes the system very vulnerable to climatic situations, climatic shifts. So I have fought for Iran to for the Iranian decision makers or the media to recognize the management problem, I also have fought, I'm not climatized the issue. I also think we should not dismiss the current situation. That's why I think that the water emergency situation in Tehran must not be mixed up with the chronic water problem or chronic water bankruptcy in the whole country, a problem that would persist even if it rains for weeks tomorrow and that the problem of Tehran disappears.
It's a truly grim forecast, but Professor Kaveh Madani, thank you so much for speaking with us about the situation in Iran on Sunday Extra today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Professor Madani is the director of the United Nations University Institute for Water, Environment and Health and a former deputy head of Iran's Department of the Environment.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.